Okay, today is Monday, November 9th, 2009, in Salina, Kansas, with Velta Sloan, and go ahead and read this.
Velta Spivey Sloan.
Okay, Velta Spivey Sloan. I'll have to get the spelling of that from you. Well, why don't you just start by telling me where you were born and the church that you originally grew up in?
I was born a little northwest of Minneapolis, Kansas, in Otto County. And I think I was baptized in the First Methodist Church. I could be wrong on that. It might have been Baptist Church, because my great-grandmother was a Baptist. But my grandmother was a Methodist, so mother was a Methodist. Except I think she went to the Baptist when she was small. I'm not doing very well, am I?
That's okay. Okay.
And then we moved south of Minneapolis, 6.5 miles south. And I went to Sunday school in Culver First Methodist Church. Went there for, well, pretty much all my growing up years. When I was in high school, I belonged to the CAR, and one of our projects was to visit each church in Minneapolis on a different Sunday. So we wound up making rounds for the whole year. We went to the Methodist, to the Presbyterian, to the Catholic, to the Episcopalian, and there was a...
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm over here. How you doing?
I'm not sure about the other. There were two more churches there, but I can't remember what they were. And then when I joined the Cadet Nurse Corps here in Salina, in Asbury Hospital, of course it's Methodist affiliated, but I went to the Presbyterian Church, and we were married in the Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
But then, because my husband was a good Methodist, and the minister who married us said he didn't care if we went to the Methodist or the Presbyterian, but we both had to go one way.
Okay.
We had premarital counseling, which at that time was almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
By my minister at the Presbyterian Church. And we've been members of the Presbyterian Church ever since.
Okay, so you're currently members of the Presbyterian Church.
Currently members here in town. We moved from here to Oklahoma City. We didn't transfer our membership down there. And then we moved back up to Minneapolis, and we did transfer our membership to Minneapolis, and I sang in a choir up there. And then we went to Overland Park and went to First Methodist Church in Lenexa, and we did not transfer our membership down there either. And we, when we came back to Salina, we transferred it here again.
Okay, so you go to the Methodist Church here now?
First United Methodist Church.
Okay. So was there a reason that you chose to stay with the Methodist Church over the Presbyterian Church, or?
Because my husband
has
a he tends to browbeat me sometimes, verbally. And he didn't want to go to the Presbyterian, although his dad was a Presbyterian. I wasn't that really set on the church, because I'd gone to a Methodist before when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And they don't differ a whole lot, except my Presbyterian theology, I suppose you'd call it. It kind of shakes up Methodists here once in a while.
Would you explain that a little bit?
I tend to believe that everything that happens in my life is foreordained, and Methodists don't believe that. They tend to think you make your own life. I tend to think that God makes our lives, and He knows when we're born, and he knows when we're going to die. And he, because of what I did with my life, I think God intends us for certain purposes throughout your life. I've always firmly believed that that's the reason I became a RN, was because I was ordained, I guess, to become a nurse.
Okay. Well, I think that makes sense. Back to the what you talked about when you went around and visited all of the churches, what was the purpose of that?
I can't really tell you right now, except it was to give us an understanding that all churches believe in the same God, and to keep you from being too narrow-minded about your churches, that people who go to one church are just as religious as people who go to another church. And I tend to think that because I'm a Methodist, that doesn't make me in God's eyes any better than a Jewish person or a Muslim person or whatever you want. I just think we've all drifted different ways. I think still God still has us in our proper spot.
Right. But, do you think that the Methodist Church, do you feel that it's open to that, the same belief that you have about that, or that it tends to be more?
I think they take quite a broad view, basically, because they're more, I don't want to say, missionary-minded than a lot of churches are.
Okay.
We try to serve people. Try to. There's always somebody in the church that has a project going to support somebody in some mission, someplace. Ellsworth Prison. See, now my 82 years are showing up. We have a girl who's opening a mission in Peru. Is it Peru? We support her. They support my husband's mission here in town with his program for Toys for Tots. In Salina, Kansas, it's not Toys for Tots, it's a Marine Toy Box. Because their money stays here in Saline County.
Oh, okay.
And there are dozens of things like this going.
Just through your church?
Outreaches from the church, yeah.
Do you, besides your normal worship on Sundays, does the church have, like, fellowship groups or other activities where the members get together to do things besides just the traditional worship?
Definitely. We have some 82 years just kicked in again. Wednesday night, we have a fellowship group. And, of course, we have our United Methodist Women's Group, which is divided into circles. The main group meets once a month, and the circles meet once a month. I don't know, I think there may be 8 circles.
And what do you do in those?
In the circles? We study. We always have a lesson. Somebody provides. The one I enjoyed was on hugs. Everybody needs a hug. And they do. It just can be on anything that's kind of uplifting.
Do they have programs for the, specifically for the youth in your church?
Oh, yes. We have a youth group.
Is it pretty active?
Very active. They have a youth minister. And right now I think they're involved in going around cleaning up, doing, like if I needed it, they'd come and rake the lawn, or they would wash my windows, or the log jobs around the house for people who can't do it for themselves.
Okay.
And that earns them money, and then they always have their trips once a year, maybe twice a year. And they, our Sunday school class has some involvement in Habitat for Humanity, because there are several of them that work on that.
And for the Sunday school classes, the kids that are involved in those, is that usually what they do while the parents are in the church service, or do they go to Sunday school and then also join the regular congregation?
We have a nursery for young children, but the Sunday school classes, adults are in a Sunday school class when the kids are in a Sunday school class, and then you go to either first or second service together.
Okay, so you do have, you have two different services. Are they the same service, or is one, I know a lot of churches do the modern and the traditional.
One is traditional, one is modern.
And which one do you attend?
Traditional. At 82.
What, has to be. What is the main differences between those two services?
The modern is very informal. You know, I grew up, you wore your Sunday best to church. That's hard to get away from. It took me a long time to wear a pair of slacks to church. I finally made that cut. I haven't worn jeans yet. But the younger people feel very comfortable in jeans, and they wear them to our second service, which is a modern. The music is altogether different. It's modern music, modern religious music, but it's modern. Traditional, you have your old hymns that have been around since Moses. And our pastor usually divests himself of his robe at the second service and goes casual with everybody else.
So do you think as the people who attend the contemporary service, as they start to become, you know, the older people in the church, do you see the traditional services just going away completely eventually?
I think so.
Yeah.
It'll have to, because to the younger people in our church, their church is this contemporary one. And that's going to be the one they relate to all their life. Maybe when they get to be 82, there will be another youth service, hopefully. But it has really brought a lot of people into the church. Our church is a leaping, bounding, growing church. I think a great part of that is because of the contemporary service.
So does that usually draw more people than the traditional one?
I can't tell you that. I don't know.
Does the church do anything else to try and increase their congregation? Do they advertise? Do they do any?
We advertise always in the paper. In fact, I just cut out the Women's Circle have their cookie walk December the 4th, I think it is. We all bake cookies and Christmas type little cookies and send them down, and they sell them for $6 a pound, and this goes into our mission work. The men's group have a spaghetti supper, and of course the women get condemned to that too, because they provide the dessert. But the men do all the work, and they fix the spaghetti, which isn't bad. You've probably been there.
I don't think
there's spaghetti suppers.
I don't think I have. Maybe a long time ago.
To that, and this is getting off the track of what we're talking about.
Oh, that's okay.
They have a orphanage kind of catty corner across from the church, and those orphans are old, probably all Catholics, and they're all invited free to the get the supper. And you asked about something else, and I didn't think of it, but we also have a call for coffee between services where people can mingle and enjoy each other.
Coffee seems to be the staple of a lot of fellowship.
Except Jim always has tea.
Oh, really?
So our Sunday school class has all these coffee mugs and one tea mug. Oh, I forgot what we were talking about before I started off on another.
Oh, I think just ways that the church reaches out to the community to try and bring people in.
And, of course, we have Methodist College here in town, too. Mm-hmm. We tend to support in many ways.
I know that three-quarters of the Methodist churches, well, just because there's so many, especially when you come out this direction in Kansas, have congregations smaller than 100. Would you say yours is on the larger side? Or
ours is bigger.
Right.
We put out a picture calendar ever so often.
Mm-hmm.
You go down and get your picture taken, and they put it in the book and send the book out to everybody. So it's another way of getting acquainted with everybody and the new members. I guess keeping track of us, too.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that what you do on Sundays and what you learn in the worship services, do you feel that they have an influence on your everyday life just from day to day? It's not just something that you do on Sundays.
Oh, I think it always influences you.
Mm-hmm.
I think my father probably influenced me more growing up than the church did. Because he was, he didn't go to church, but he firmly believed in God. And one of the things I remember him saying, we were walking out across the fields in the pasture one day, and I'm this little girl, very impressionable, and I thought my father was God himself. And I said, he said, now, when you look around at all these things, that little leaf, that huge tree, that blue sky, how can you say that there isn't a God? He's got to be. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I feel. It just, it is.
Mm-hmm.
He is. But I grew up in the country, which is kind of isolated from the city, so you're more influenced, I think, by your parents in the country than you are in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a lot of other influences in town.
You mentioned before that the youth group has activities where they can come and help with members' yards or any work around the house. How do you guys handle the work that needs to be done around the church as far as the upkeep? Do you hire people to do that?
We have a maintenance man.
You do?
Mm-hmm. We just undertook a multi-million-dollar overhaul of the church, which included redoing the sanctuary and the I suppose it's a, I don't know, but it's the heating and lighting was all reworked and new furnaces and air conditioners were put in and new support put in for the church because that's an old building.
Do you know how old it is?
No, but I could probably tell you if you turn this off, you know.
Oh.
I should have gotten this.
Do you know how all of the improvements that they're doing to the church, are those funded by donations from from the congregation?
Because
I know some churches don't take lightly to the idea of having a mortgage on the church or having any sort of debt. So it's basically funded through the...
We all have kept Jim here. He could answer all those questions for you. We had a fund drive and a pledge drive. Now, whether we borrowed money or not, I don't know.
Okay.
If we did, it's paid off.
Okay.
Paid off before it was finished.
As far as the organization of the church, with the Methodist Church, you guys rotate pastors?
They are determined by the conference, and we get whoever they send us. We have no choice.
Have there ever been any instances where the congregation wasn't happy with the particular pastor?
Oh, yes. Our congregation... Reverend Weibel, when he was sent to Emporia, I think it was, we had quite an upheaval in the church because everybody liked him. And they went to the bishop and big boys and tried to get him back, but they wouldn't budge. We had quite a naughty book about it. In fact, I think they lost a bunch of members then.
Oh, really?
That's usually what happens.
Have there been instances where the congregation actually wanted a pastor removed that they didn't?
Oh, yeah. That was the one that followed him.
Oh, okay.
She didn't have a chance. There was no way she could have succeeded and been successful because he was just so popular. I think the one we have now, the same thing may happen, because he is extremely popular, and they're going to be terrible when they move him someplace else.
So how does that happen? Do you have a committee within your church that needs to say, we want this person removed, or
no.
It's just the entire congregation?
You just take what they give you. The only time I know that there ever was any action formed was after Reverend Weibel was transferred. And that was just kind of a grassroots thing within the church.
But there was nothing could be done about it. So. Do you find that, have there been instances where people have left maybe one of the Methodist churches in town to go to another one because of a preferred pastor or because
Yeah. Methodists they're pretty self-thinking individuals, and if they don't like something, they don't mind showing up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like there's always quite a few Methodist churches within even the same city.
Within Solana, there are a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, 4 or 5.
Right, just
because. And we only have 40,000 people.
Right. Right. Do you have, are there groups of, I don't know if you would say elders or some kind of committees that make decisions for the congregation?
Trustees.
And how did those people get into those positions?
I don't know. I always thought maybe it was because they had a little money and getting more.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what struck me, because they are pretty well positioned in Solana.
Okay. And is that the same throughout all of the Methodist churches? Is there usually a group of trustees? Or?
Yeah. They take care of the building and financial... whatever. When we remodeled, they set up a special committee to handle remodeling.
Mm-hmm. And were those just people that volunteered to be on the committee? Were they appointed?
Oh, I think they probably were kind of coerced into serving on it. One of our ex-ministers was headed it. In fact, he was president of Wesleyan at that time. Very dynamic individual, and he got the job done. I'd have hated to have his job.
Are there women that serve on the board of trustees?
There may be one. It's not prohibited. We have Methodist women ministers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be one on our board. Can't be sure. Can't tell you who the trustees are now. Could tell you one of them. That's all offhand, I can say.
Let's see. As far as inside the church goes, like as symbols of artistic expression, you mentioned that between the two different services, the music is different. Is there different, like, is there choirs in one or a band in one? I know sometimes the more modern, they have an actual band.
In our temporary, we have the organ and a full choir.
Mm-hmm.
In the contemporary one, they have, I think it's a piano and a bass. I don't know what it is. Don't think about it. I think there's one horn. It's a, this little ensemble sits over in the corner of the front of the church, and it's been so long since I've been there for contemporary. I can't tell you. But we do have, if you go back to the youth, we do have, even in the traditional, we have high school students who perform during that services, maybe a solo, maybe a musical instrument, or whatever. And then we have a children's service each Sunday in both services. The children all go to the front of the church and somebody has a nice little program for them.
And that's just within the regular service?
That's within the regular service.
Inside the church itself, is it pretty traditional? Is there stained glass or?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. They saved that in renovation.
Okay.
And surprisingly, we don't have a lot of vandalism. As far as those windows go, you'd think they'd be prime targets, but they don't seem to be. Of course, they're high.
Yeah.
They're up. Probably second story.
Okay. Is there anything specific just about daily life as a child that your church influenced, or
as a child?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it made me have a desire to keep going to church. I can remember going to Washburn University. My current boyfriend was going to Washburn, and he invited me down for some special thing, and I had to stay in a girl's dorm. Remember that? And we went to church the next day. And I come from this background with these small churches. Most of them didn't have stained glass. Most of them didn't have fancy altars. And we went into this huge church down there with this extremely ornate altar. And I was just kind of overawed by the whole thing. I can still see it today. And I was probably 16 then. But I do remember that. And I can't tell you what kind of church it was. But that was part of the weekend festivities, I suppose you'd call them.
Mm-hmm. Were your children raised in the same church?
Yes.
You raised them within the church? And were they involved with, like, the youth group activities?
Terry was. Sandy never did do too much.
Have they stayed with the church as they've gotten older?
Sandy has. Terry doesn't too much.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me why. I can tell you why. Terry married a man who was raised a Catholic who had difficulties with his religion and who now states very brazenly that he does not believe in God. And he makes no bones about it. He didn't want his daughter to go. And she should have. And I think that was what kept Terry from being active in the church. She's belonged to a circle since she's been married, but she just sort of did keep it up. And Sandy is, she was married both times in a church, once here and once out in Norton. And her daughter, not there again, they had a youth group in, I want to say it was the Baptist church out there, that met every week that really had the kids coming in, and her daughter went to that weekly.
Mm-hmm.
All the time she was growing up. But she claims to be a Methodist, but she was mostly brought up within that Baptist church.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't tell what your kids are going to do.
Right.
I think that's one thing. I think you have to find your own way to God.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something I can demand of my kids. Maybe by my lifestyle I can help them go in that direction, but you cannot say you're going to do this every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can when they're little because you take them, but when they get older you can't do that.
Does the Methodist Church have like a confirmation process where when the children are older they can make the decision to stay with the church, or how
yes.
does that work? How old are they when they go through that?
They're 12. I think it's fifth grade.
Okay.
And then they always have a Sunday where they recognize the graduates from the eighth grade and the graduates from high school and the graduates from college.
And if
they usually have a tealock reception form.
If somebody wants to join the church as an adult, is there a certain process that they have to go through if they're converting to be a Methodist, or if maybe they just haven't been a part of a church before? Or do they just come on in and
you visit the church? I mean, usually you visit the church, and if you decide you like it, you talk to the minister and he welcomes you in on a Sunday. He will explain the principles of Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of explains to him what Methodism is all about, I guess. And if they agree, then they bring me on Sunday and they have a ritual. I want to say oath, but I don't know that it's an oath. It's just, do you agree to support the church with your presence?
Mm-hmm.
Your presence, your money, and something. Prayers.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty informal.
I would say very informal. It's not like if you converted to the Catholic Church, you'd have to go to class.
Right.
We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of like the United States of America. We take your poor and your hungry and your tired.
Well, that kind of leads me to the next. How have you seen the church maybe deal with more liberal issues like the war or homosexuality or some of the things that are more relevant to today that, you know, could divide a congregation?
Well, we don't have the problem of sex in ministry because we take either sex or, either or. With some of the rigor of war,
mm-hmm.
we support our boys in war. I suppose the congregation is pretty divided on how they feel about the war.
Mm-hmm.
But our preachers do not tell us how we should feel. At least if they do, I've never heard one do it. Our preachers mostly preach to us how we can improve our individual life.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that God would approve of. Homosexuality, again, is an individual choice. We had one gentleman in our Sunday school class who was quite anti-homosexual, and he made several speeches in our Sunday school class. He didn't convert anybody in their way of thinking, because you either think one way or the other. I'm probably particularly difficult to convince that it's a sin because of my medical background.
Mm-hmm.
But he left the church because he couldn't get us all stirred up in an uproar about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what church he went to then. But at one time they were quite active in the church. So it's probably pretty much an individual thing. I've never heard it preached from the pulpit. One way or the other.
Are there any, maybe just even from your childhood or all the way up through present day, just memorable characters or pastors or just certain people that really stick out to you in your mind that have been part of the church for some reason?
The one I remember very vividly was the one who married us.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because we had a personal connection with him in our premarital counseling. But there was one in the Methodist church, and I want to say that was before I got married. That's when I was in training. If a woman had a baby who cried and she'd get up to leave the sanctuary, he would tell her to sit back down. Anytime that he couldn't preach over a baby's crying, he was going to quit the ministry. Embarrassed the women to death. But he did. He had this enormous voice, and he could outshout any kid that came along. I remember Dr. Wall. Reverend Weibel, because he was, in fact, he was the one who in his service one day made me understand why I went into nursing, because I was called to it. And I'd read that passage in the Bible probably 5 times and just sailed right across the top of my head and never paid any attention. But that day, he explained it some way, and I understood it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
There was the priest in Minneapolis who organized a basketball, girls' basketball team. I remember him pretty well. And this minister we have now, He's so dynamic, I don't think he could forget him.
What's his name?
Troy Bowers.
What is it about him that just makes people so drawn to the way he...
Personality, I guess, I probably have to say. They were missionaries in Peru before he came here. I think in Germany too. And he was youth minister here before that. And he just is an enjoyable person to be around. Enjoys sermons immensely. He doesn't talk down to you, he talks on your level. Mm-hmm. And as I say, he's trying to give the youth in, mm-hmm. and doing a fantastic job. But the one I remember most, I suppose, was the one who married us. I think there's one other one who really made an impression on both of us was the Methodist minister in Lenexa, who always said in the spirit that the Lord loves a cheerful giver. We'll now have a collection. He was young, he was dynamic, and he went out and killed himself. And we could never ever understand what troubled that man so much that he felt he had to do that. He was super.
Did that happen while he was still the pastor at your church? How did the congregation...
We weren't there then when it happened.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how the congregation reacted. I would imagine they reacted with horror.
Mm-hmm.
How did that congregation react down in Wichita when that man was killed in their
mm-hmm.
service?
Mm-hmm.
Just as you don't understand, so you never have a closure to it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's probably it.
Well, kind of along those lines, does the church have some sort of, I don't know, maybe not program, but bereavement support to
grief
its members?
Counseling.
It does have grief counseling.
Yeah, you have a group that feels they need it. For a while, there was a group who met I think it was on Sunday afternoon, of people who didn't feel like they could sit through a full service, people my age, Jim's age, that were physically unable to sit through a full service, and we do not go to church anymore because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But we watched Wichita's Methodist minister on television.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was so that you could have communion. And it didn't take long, I think it was about 20 minutes service. But the people just wouldn't go to it. I guess if you don't feel like going, you don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that covered most of the stuff I had on my list. Is there anything else that you'd like to...
Gosh, I can't think of anything we haven't covered. I wish I had better answers for you.
Oh,
and
nice.
I'm sure Jim would, because he's more into the way the church is run than I am.
Okay. Well, you gave me some wonderful answers, and maybe I can get back out here and set something up. That would be...
He'd be available most any time. This friend of mine, Arlene Agin, if she'll do it, and I'm pretty sure she would, is a Lutheran member.
Okay.
So you'd get quite a different
mm-hmm.
Picture.
That'd be wonderful.
When I was in the Presbyterian Church, we pick our ministers in the Presbyterian Church.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Out of the congregation?
No.
Or just they give you...
They come out of the seminary, mm-hmm. but they have to come and be interviewed and preach, and then you vote on whether you want them or not.
Really? Is that how all Presbyterian churches
work? And then they're there, period.
Okay.
For years, I guess, for years.
So they just stay with the church until maybe they retire, and then you ask for them to send some more potential? Huh. I've never heard of that.
That's different.
Mm-hmm.
There is one other lady who was mainly Presbyterian, who's in our Sunday school class, and between she and I, we give them fits every once in a while, because we don't quite believe the way they believe.
Do you think that the rotation of the pastors within the Methodist faith, do you think it does more good, it brings more good because it brings more viewpoints, or do you think it's better to have just the stability of one pastor?
I don't know. I'm so used to it
mm-hmm.
that you really don't think anything about it. You hate it. You really hate it. But you know that's the way it's going to be.
Right.
I suppose it's kind of like going to school. You don't really want to, but you know you got to if you want to do anything with your life.
Right. Fair enough.
So, we're fortunate because we've had some very good men. Most of our pastors come from rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the same point of view that most people here in Mid-Kansas do.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably all Republicans. They're probably all agricultural. And they're not going to shake you up very much.
Mm-hmm.